Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 Project here in the Nerd Party Network. Every 2 weeks we look at two films from the A24 filmography, and in between we welcome the guests involved in making their films to take us behind the scenes. In this episode we review Never Going Back and A Prayer Before Dawn, and joining me as ever is the sandwich bun to my lewd act, Dallas King.
That's a very niche but topical reference. I like it, yes. I've now got images of Sausage Party. I was going to say Sandwich Party. That's maybe the sequel, but Sausage Party with, I don't think I'll ever get that final orgy scene out of my head.
We're crossing paths with a potential Annapurna Party podcast there.
Yep.
So, in A24 Hour News, the trailer dropped for Green Knight. What's your initial reaction to the latest film from David Lowry, the genius behind A Ghost Story, Dallas?
Well, I was very, very excited when the news sort of struck that he was going to be making another film with A24. I went on to Wikipedia to research the story of the Green Knight, because they believed it was going to have some sort of reference to the King Arthur sort of legend of Gawain the Green. And it looks like it's sticking fairly faithfully to that. I'm sure there'll be a twist or an update to the story so it doesn't play out exactly how we expect, but I was actually quite surprised by the trailer, even though it's, you know, David Lowry who did sort of Ghost Story, but he's also had quite a varied back catalogue. We know The Old Man and the Gun, and even sort of Disney's Pete's Dragon as well. So to see a film which would probably be more in keeping stylistically, I would have said, with the work of sort of Robert Eggers and Ari Aster, especially down to the sort of casting of Ralph Ineson and Kate Dickey in there, it did almost seem like a witch follow-up. So, but I mean, the look of it looks fantastic. I mean, Dev Patel is very sort of underrated actor, I think. I think he's really starting to come into his own. You know, he was in Skins over here in the UK, sort of had a big splash with Slumdog Millionaire, but then sort of retreated into the sort of background for a while, but sort of coming back in with sort of Lion, and then Personal History of David Copperfield. I thought he was fantastic in that. So I'm really excited to see where he goes with this character and the sort of supporting cast with like the likes of them, and then including sort of Joel Edgerton, and I think it's Alicia Vikander as well. It's definitely up there on my most anticipated list for this year, and I think, and it's potential to get, I think, a lot of people talking about it on Twitter. So, and it's quite interesting that even the people over in the UK are referring to it as an A24 film, because A24 is technically only an American distribution company, but I think we've now reached the stage where A24 has now global recognition. And I think we saw earlier this year with The Lighthouse, where even though it was released by Universal over here, everyone still kept calling it an A24 film. And yeah, I think good on them for sort of achieving that sort of a niche hipster brand.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, what we've, I suppose, me and you have discovered really is that, you know, people seem to struggle to tell the difference between A24 films that are distributed. So that could be something like the two films that we're going to discuss today, and A24 produced films like, say, Midsommar, Hereditary, that end up being made kind of financed by A24 and then distributed by them in America, but say overseas, like The Lighthouse ends up being kind of released by Universal. But you know, their brand has certainly gone from strength to strength. And you know, for Green Knight, I've avoided what the plot is. I've never sort of read up on the subject. I want to kind of remain in the dark on this one, but that trailer was a hell of a mood piece, and I'm really excited to see what comes next. It's a hell of a cast, and I'm just so kind curious to see what this story is going to be. And Dev Patel is, as you say, is going from strength to strength, so it's real exciting to see him. And this is, seems like one of these films I just can't wait to discuss in a future episode. So we lost one of A24's most prolific actors from The Souvenir Part 2, but Robert Pattinson, who is currently in our neighborhood currently in our neighbouring Glasgow shooting The Batman, will return alongside Claire Denis in a movie set during the Iran-Contra scandal in 1984, The Stars at Noon. And joining them will be Once Upon a Time in Hollywood's Margaret Qualley. So, Dallas, what do you know about this one? The plot synopsis that we've been given for it is that, set in 1984 during the Nicaraguan Revolution, the film follows a mysterious English businessman and a headstrong American journalist who strike up a passionate romance. They soon become embroiled in a dangerous labyrinth of lies and conspiracies and are forced to try and escape the country, with only each other to trust and rely on. So what do you make of this exciting news?
I'm very pleased, but I mean, I think we almost sort of copied in each other to the tweet almost simultaneously, I think, when the news dropped sort of earlier this week. And yeah, no, it's very exciting. You know, I think it's fair to say that maybe both of us weren't huge fans of High Life, Claire Denis and Robert Pattinson's previous team up. I think it was possibly coloured by the fact that we'd both seen Iñárritu and really found that particular sort of sexy space romp movie the superior one. But I mean, there was no denying the sort of skill and the talent involved. It was just on a personal level, the story didn't really click with me as much as other sort of science fiction films I'd seen that year. But I thought Claire Denis did a great job of really getting a sort of a different side of Pattinson that we'd had before. So I'm excited to see them sort of teaming up again. Margaret Qualley, I thought she was fantastic in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She was in, it was The Disappearance of Sydney Hall as well. So I think she's a really exciting young actress on the rise. So it's going to be great to see them sort of team up as well. But, you know, I mean, this now puts Pattinson in, you know, firmly in the lead in terms of the I think people, there was a Twitter thing earlier I saw today, and it's basically the face of A24. And, you know, he really has come, you know, a world away from Twilight. And I think, yeah, it's, I'm always excited to see his name next to the A24 brand, and I think it's going to be exciting to the point where, you know, I'm sure that some people will probably call The Batman an A24 film when it comes out in 2021 as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And next week, we're going to be actually joined by Claire Tran, who recently starred alongside Robert Pattinson and Claire Denis' High Life. So here's a preview of that interview. God, that was a smooth segue.
I did my own backstory. She didn't really tell me about Mink's past, so I made up my own story and I went along with it on my own. I kind of developed things on my own. She gave me a lot of freedom.
What was that backstory that you created for Mink, and how did you sort of develop it? Was it like mood boards, writing down like a little biography? How did you sort of kind of bring Mink to life in your head?
Well, because she hasn't got a lot of dialogue, she was very mysterious, and also being so, you know, violent, I was like, okay, I have to find something that motivates so much violence, because it can't come out of nowhere, and they are in and out of space, so how did she get there, and how come she's so aggressive? I wrote this biography. I kind of wrote down, you know, what her story was, why was she in jail in the first place, what did she do, and I kind of gave her an age, because it was written in the script that she was so young. I decided she, in the spaceship, I can't remember, maybe she was a teenager, like 19, but then she would have committed her crimes when she was a child, like 10-ish. So very, 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 very young as a child, which is freaky.
What kind of crimes did you sort of have her penciled down as having committed?
Well, I kind of decided, this is very weird to talk about this, but I decided that if she was on death row at 10 years old, she must have done something horrendous. And because she's so violent, I imagined that she started killing her schoolmates. She just kind of like, yeah, did this mass murder thing in schools. Like in America, they just start shooting people. And I imagine something horrible, like she just freaked, like in video games, started killing people. Maybe not with a gun, because that would have been really weird, but killing her schoolmates and then death row.
So it's been a while since we've kind of rounded up who's coming on to the show. So in addition to the already previously announced guests of Kyle Newman, the director of Barely Lethal, Claudia Chiney from Midsummer, and Low Tide writer-director Kevin McMullen, we've got future episodes dropping with Menasha's writer-director Joshua Z. Weinstein, the star of Ulrika from Midsummer, Rebecca Johnson, Augustine Frizzell, the director of Never Going Back and the opening episode of Euphoria, and also an appearance from Increasia and A Ghost Story, and Imanen Lewis from 8th Grade, and hopefully a few more that we can announce in the coming weeks. So plenty to keep an eye on in the coming weeks and months on the A24 project. I think we are literally going to be a weekly podcast all the way until about August at this stage, so it's all very exciting.
I think we're going to run out of films before we run out of guests at this rate, I think. But this, you know, this is how we win, as you know, our guest last week, Wayne Diamond, would have said, you know, from Uncut Gems, this is how we win.
Exactly. So I look forward to, and we've got First Cow on the way, so we're looking forward to interviewing the cow from that, and the Green Knight. So we're all after the titular role actors at this stage.
It is the titular role.
So, in our first movie of the day is Never Going Back, written and directed by Augustine Frizzell. So Jesse and Angela, high school dropouts, are taking a week off to chill at the beach. Too bad, their house got robbed, rent's due, and they're about to get fired, and they're broke. So Dallas, when did you see this film for the first time, and what was your initial reaction?
Well, I didn't know too much about the film. It's not one that had previously sort of been on my radar. It was only through the A24 project that I found out about it, and I actually only watched it last week off of US iTunes. You know, always maybe a potential warning sign that this is one of those films which didn't get a UK release, but you know, I watched it. I didn't know anything about it, just sort of put it on. I knew it was about a couple of young sort of girls who seemed to get into a little bit of trouble. The film it sort of probably most reminded me of, in terms of tone, it's similar within the A24 project, was probably sort of like a Spring Breakers sort of thing, with these sort of two headstrong young women sort of looking out to have a great time, just what a party all the time, but you know, life conspires against them, I guess it would have said. But you know, I was impressed with the filmmaking side of it, but there wasn't enough in there to engage me on a sort of emotional level with the character. I think it basically comes down to the characters that pretty much all of the main protagonists are not really the most likable or nicest of people, and I just couldn't. Maybe I'm just getting old. You know, I'm 40 now, so maybe I just don't understand the youth of today, and was slightly out of touch with them. I think. What about yourself?
So what you're trying to say is that you don't like people that maybe eat a couple of prunes in like the supermarket, maybe dress with like their kind of hot pants with their bum showing out. Is that what you're trying to say to the
balance? I don't like grazers at the supermarket getting their dirty little fingers in around the nuts and stuff like that. Oh no, hygiene people. I mean, hygiene, terrible.
And next you'll be telling me that you're now owner of a sandwich bar as well.
A vegan sandwich shop, yes. I'm opening a vegan sandwich shop, yeah. Vegan mayo on the bun.
For me, I caught this film last year, sort of my as part of my 52 films by Women Challenge. I picked up as a 99 cents rental, and I was actually really taken with it. And what I quite liked about it is that there's a lot of comparisons between this and Superbad, for example. And what I kind of find is that there's been a lot of films in the past few years where, you know, like Never Going Back, you know, alongside things like Booksmart, etc., is that you have these female-led characters, you know, a film written and directed by a woman, and it's maybe not getting the attention it deserves. And I think there's something to be said about that, to be honest. Because what I like about Never Going Back is that there's been the usual lazy comparisons. It's like, it's super bad, but for women. And I'm pretty sure that got recycled for Booksmart as well. But what I like a lot about this film, and I enjoyed it particularly on the rewatch as well, is that these are pretty sensible women, by and large. You know, they are working class characters, and we don't often get to see that in sort of teen movies. They seem to be really focused on teenagers that are pretty well off families. You know, maybe they're hipsters, they consequences of their actions will often be perhaps on their relationships, whereas this is like the things that go wrong to them in the situations they find themselves in ultimately kind of threaten their livelihood, whether that's their job, being able to afford a holiday. And that's something we don't often see the consequences of play out in sort of the teen movies. And I thought Never Going Back did a really effective job of portraying a different kind of class of character in them.
Yeah, no, I mean, what, you know, story-wise, you know, it is, you know, if you were to read the plot about these two girls who are saving up to go on a beach holiday and whatever, and I don't want to get into any spoilers, but essentially how the film starts is they've booked the holiday and then life is conspiring against them over the fact, will they actually be able to go on this holiday, because basically the money becomes an issue. And, you know, the more they try to alleviate their situation, the worse it seems to get. So there's always these obstacles to overcome, and it, you know, it's quite interesting to see how these two women go about it. You know, there's scenes where, you know, they will use their feminine wiles to basically get the stupid, ridiculous men to do stuff for them, but then they're also, you know, they're shown to be really actually quite smart. They know what they're doing, and they're using, you know, their what they have to do that, and that's good. But I also liked, what I liked about it is you could tell that it was sort of written and directed by a woman. You know, there wasn't like the male gaze on these characters, and everything that they did, you could see, you could understand their motivations and why they would do what they wanted to do. So it never felt false, which was good about the film, and it was never sort of sensationalized as well, and they were never sort of put into situations that, you know, a mainstream audience would think, you know, in order to try and get male viewers to want to see this film. There was none of that, which I appreciated.
I think one thing I also really liked about this, and obviously it will come out in the full discussion we have with Augustine, is that she helped with the casting of Euphoria, and I know, I don't think you've seen it yet, Dallas, but I think it's one of the best cast TV shows in years. I actually think this is also a really good bit of casting as well. You know, these are two actresses I am incredibly unfamiliar with, Maya Mitchell and Camila Monroe, so they've become a bit more well known since this film. But I think this, in terms of the leads and the supporting characters, Kyle Mooney as Brandon, for example, I think that this is a really well cast film. What did you make of the cast and the kind of lead characters and side characters in this film?
I mean, so at the start of the sort of recap of this film, you know, I did say that I had issues with the characters and that they weren't particularly likable or, from my perspective, all that relatable. But there was, none of it was down to the performances, which I thought were very good. I, like yourself, was not familiar with these two young actresses before. I hadn't seen them in anything before, but I thought they were both very good, very engaging, very watchable, and I'd be keen to see, you know, where they go next. It was just purely from a sort of character point of view that I didn't sort of really connect with them and didn't find them particularly likable. But I think that's potentially part of it. You know, the way they sort of operate and stuff like that, they're potentially not the nicest things. They do bad things and stuff like that. But I think it maybe sort of depends on your age group and where you're sort of coming from. Like you say, I'm just a boring old fart these days and couldn't really connect. You know, if I'd seen this film maybe sort of 10, 15 years ago, I would have appreciated it more, because it also has maybe almost a sort of Kevin Smith sort of vibe, and the fact, you know, the sort of the characters who are working in like a sandwich shop, which is similar to something in Clerks, and the sort of average Joe sort of working in the diner sort of thing, where you've got a bit of that as well. I like that. But I mean, I thought they were good, and, you know, also the spot characters. Yeah, Kyle Mooney was a standout as well, I thought, as Brandon, with that amazing haircut that he's got as well, I thought.
Yeah, so I want to go into a bit of spoiler territory, so I'd like to have a wee chat about the ending. So if you've not seen Never Going Back, pause this, come back in about 10 or so minutes and we'll dive into Prayer Before Dawn. But I want to talk about the unforgettable ending. So they decide they are missing out on their rent and decide that they are going to go to Brandon's sandwich shop and see if they can solicit some money out of him by giving him the opportunity to maybe cut their breasts or maybe see them make out. But the individual from earlier on that they confront at the grocery shop returns to this sandwich shop where he is the owner of it, and things start to unravel in quite a grotesque and unforgettable way. So we'll keep it kind of a bit general like that. So what did you make of this ending? Did you find it as unforgettable as me, where everything that's been building into this film comes in an absolute crescendo?
I have to admit, I was surprised by the return of that character. I thought that was a nice way to sort of bookend the whole thing, because you thought it was just going to be like a one-off interaction, but then I like the way it all sort of tied together, and it was really the sort of the final third of the film where it really started to come together for me, and any sort of previous sort of misgivings I had kind of melted away. I think it started with the sort of scene where they get fired at the from their job, and one of the things I really liked about this film was the use of music in it, and two tracks in particular, and the fact that the girls, while high, go back to work to get a dressing down from their boss, and it just sort of cuts to this Michael Bolton song, How Am I Supposed to Live Without You, while they're looking at people's waffles and stuff like that. They're just dreaming of these waffles, and then they're sort of talking to each other about, do you think the boss is going to figure out, you know, that we're high, and then it just pans to him in the room with him going, yes, I can hear you. I really liked that moment. I thought that was a great piece of comedy. And then, like you say, the crescendo of bodily fluids in a rather violent and projectile form. And I love the fact it's probably one of the best uses of Barry Manilow's Mandy that I've ever seen on film. And I really sort of enjoyed the sort of final third of the film. That's where it all kind of came together for me. And yeah, in quite an unforgettable way.
Yeah, I think when you kind of touch on it there, sort of the scene where they turn up high to their workplace, you know, turning up in wet uniforms, their time in jail, this ending. I think this film is made up of so many great experiences, little moments as well, that kind of really make it kind of quite a memorable teen film for me. And I think I find it to be a pretty underrated film. I don't think it's got any sort of UK release, which is really frustrating, because there's definitely an audience for films like this. And I just think, yeah, this is definitely an underrated film. But I think what's been kind of proven is sort of with the cast, Augustine Frizzell, that this film has become a bit of a calling card, and they've continued to go from strength to strength since. So, you know, I think that the right people have kind of caught Never Going Back. And I think that, you know, I'm excited to see where these people's careers go over the next few years. So yeah, I think Never Going Back is definitely a film, you know, really good running time, plenty of laughs, great cast. Yeah, I thought it was a real pleasant way, and I was glad to rewatch it again.
Yeah, no, I mean, sort of, I had sort of a lower rating than you, but you know, I did enjoy it. It just didn't make as much of an impact on me as it did you. But I think, like you're saying, I think it's a film which I think deserves a bit of a wider audience, and I'd certainly recommend that if anyone did sort of watch Booksmart last year and really enjoy it, I think it's something that a huge proportion of that audience would get a kick out of. And definitely if you're also doing like the 52 films by women sort of challenge this year, it's definitely one to put on your list and catch at some point. And who knows, it's probably the kind of film which hopefully maybe will sort of appear on Netflix at some point over here in the UK, because I think they've got quite a lot on the US Netflix catalogue. So I expect it should turn up at some point. And it's definitely worth, I think, like the around about the 80, 90 minutes of your time anyway. So it's not going to outstay its welcome.
No. So let's go move on to our second film for the day, A Prayer Before Dawn. So this is the true story of an English boxer, Billy Moore, who is incarcerated in one of Thailand's most notorious prisons as he fights in a Muay Thai tournament to earn his freedom. So Dallas, when was the first time you watched this, and what was your reaction to it?
Well, it was actually yesterday was the first time that I watched this film. It's a film which I was aware of. I just had never really got round to watching it. I think it had a reasonably small release in the UK, but I remember it did get quite a lot of critical acclaim. I think it was the British Independent Film Awards. I think Joe Cole actually won Best Actor. I think it was late 2017, early 2018 for that. And it sort of piqued my interest, but it was just one which I'd never got around to, and I managed to get a copy of it from the library and put it on yesterday, and it was a very, very sort of intense and really sort of difficult film to watch in places, and it was, yeah, it certainly left an impression. What about yourself?
Yeah, I caught this one just a few weeks ago, and this was actually my last A24 film that I had to catch. I was kind of forever waiting for it to become like a bit of a cheaper rental on iTunes. This is one that has been kind of evaded me for a little while, so I kind of finally got up to date with A24 releases, and this has had the honour, you know, eventually will be overtaken soon by something like First Cow, but yeah, it was... it was kind of got to the end of that A24 journey. So yeah, I really enjoyed this one. It seemed to be getting a lot of buzz from, you know, I think you find sometimes that when people say, what's an underrated A24 film? You see people like talk about things like Spring Breakers or something like that. And you're like, no, it's one of their most acclaimed or well-known films. A Prayer Before Dawn is one of these underrated, perhaps, A24 films where it hasn't perhaps had the largest audience. It maybe doesn't appeal to maybe that traditional audience kind of audience you'd expect from an A24 film. But I really enjoyed this one. It was a kind of look into a culture and way of life that I could not imagine. And I thought Joe Cole was an actor I'd maybe seen in some stuff. I know he was in Green Room, for example. But this was my sort of first exposure to him in sort of a leading man role, and I wanted to see more of him. I could see it having sort of the same effect that something like Never Going Back had on its leads, of being a kind of film where it's like, right, who is this guy? Get him into more things. I thought it was a real enjoyable film, and we come back to A24's opus kind of you know, mission statement really is films from a unique point of view, and I think A Prayer Before Dawn really does present that in this sort of Thai prison. They recruited a lot of kind of ex-cons that had gone into this type of prison to make it incredibly authentic. Absolutely a real kind of treat. You know, I thought it was a good film, not the greatest, but I thought it was a really interesting film to watch. It was one that stood out for me.
Yeah, no, I think there's this debate at the moment over the word underrated to describe films, because like you say, it's like, you know, if someone says Spring Breakers is underrated, it's like, well, no, I think a lot of people really liked it. I think the problem is it's underseen, and that, you know, a lot of these films, particularly A24 films here in the UK, if, you know, they're coming from America, they will be underseen because they never got a full release or even any release. And I think this one certainly seemed it did get a proper release here in the UK. It certainly feels like a film four release. I think they might have been behind some of the production of it. And I mean, when you watch it, it is like an immersive experience. You're basically with this character of Billy Moore the entire film. And you know, when it first came up, and you've got him, he sort of starts off in this boxing match, and he's clearly a man who's full of anger and rage. You know, he's strung out on drugs, and then he gets arrested, and you've got all these sort of Thai cops shouting at him. And I was thinking, oh, maybe there's a problem with my DVD, and then sort of check the subtitle option, and then it just came up with you know, indecipherable Thai chattering and stuff like that. And I went, ah, okay, right, so there's not going to be any subtitles from most of the Thai characters. And I thought, okay, it's going to be difficult to follow, but then I went, okay, that's the point. It's, you're meant to be sort of following Billy's mindset here, and that you are completely, you're in a completely alien environment. You have no idea what's going on. You have no idea what people are saying. And it's a scary, scary world. I mean, like the first sort of couple of days he's in there, you know, he's, you know, beaten up, he's subject to seeing horrific things, you know, like a fellow prisoner is raped and he's forced to watch at knife point and stuff like this. And then you've got the suicide, and you've got, you know, the drug abuse and stuff like that. So you really sort of, it's a really tough film to watch. And I think one of the sort of strengths of it is, like you say, you know, it feels real and authentic, because like you say, they had all the extras, and some of the characters are played by real, you know, former Thai prison inmates, not current ones. You know, it wasn't filmed in a real prison at that time. You know, it's all potentially reformed, or, you know, maybe still doing bad things, but hey, you know, they're so very well acted and stuff like that. And it was really, really sort of harrowing watch at times. And you know, those, I just wish at some points there was maybe more, because it's like, I think it was a Vithaya Panzrasingham who plays one of the sort of main prison guards, and instantly recognised him from Nicholas Winding Refn's Only God Forgives. And I thought, oh, right, okay, he's maybe going to be like the antagonist of the thing. He's going to be the one that sort of tries to break down this character in potentially like a Shawshank Redemption kind of way. But really, it was more just about pure Billy's attempts to sort of survive and make the best out of this situation, and finds that, you know, violence is potentially the only way out of it, and sort of dedicating himself to sort of progressing with this boxing thing as a potential way out of it and gaining respect and surviving, I think.
Yeah, does this convince you to check out the book? Obviously, you rented this DVD from the library. Would you rent the book A Prayer Before Dawn, My Nightmare in Thailand's Prisons?
I mean, I think I would probably want to learn a bit more about the story, because, you know, it is actually a film which is very sparse and minimal in terms of dialogue. So, I mean, that's one of the real strengths of Joe Cole's performance, is that he has to basically deliver everything that he's thinking and whatever through, you know, his face and his eyes and stuff like that. It's a very sort of physical performance that he has to deliver. He doesn't really get the opportunity to have any sort of long monologues or dialogues with any particular characters, or, you know, there's no, you know, internal voiceover or anything like that. He has to do it all with his being. So it would be interesting to sort of read a bit more about, you know, just exactly what he was going through and maybe what's happened to him since, because I don't know if it's spoilers to say. I mean, the film's been out for a few couple of years, but the real Billy Moore does make a sort of cameo appearance in it towards the end of the film as well. So it's good that it was made, you know, with his blessing and with, you know, real creative input from him as well. So it's probably as authentic a sort of one of these stories as you can get. It wasn't sort of sugar coated and, you know, based on a true story, and then it had sort of, it was made a bit fluffier just for a Hollywood audience. It stays true to its roots, I think.
They should have used the real life Billy Moore as, like, obviously as an ex-convict in a Thai prison, and just had him as like a background extra or something like that, just kicking around. That would have been a real meta use of like an ex-Thai prisoner for the film, or maybe that's just me. So any final thoughts on A Prayer Before Dawn, Dallas?
I think it's definitely one that deserves a wider audience. It's not going to be for everyone. It is a really sort of tough and harrowing watch. You know, it's not maybe as like viscerally shocking as, you know, maybe Joe Cole's other film in the A24 catalogue, Green Room, which has some really truly sort of horrific moments, but that's more from a sort of thrilling thing. This is, will take you to a very, very dark place, but hopefully, like I did, when you will emerge with a little bit of hope at the end. But It's certainly made me vow to, if I ever go to Thailand, never to fall foul of the law, because I certainly don't think I would survive very long in a Thai prison, that's for sure.
No, you may do like a really good vegan sandwich, but you're not going to be able to do sort of a Prayer Before Dawn style Thai bout. So I would have more confidence in you surviving in the Never Going Back universe than Prayer Before Dawn. So we will return in 2 weeks to review Slice and God Help Us, The Children Act. I can't believe I've got to rewatch that film. But until then, you will have our interview next week with Claire Tran, and we'll talk with you again in 2 weeks' time. But thanks to everyone for listening, and be sure to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and so on. We really appreciate it and help spread the word. And we've had a new one recently, and it's greatly appreciated. So until next time, goodbye.